comrades. Let's kick this thing on down the road. It's time for Freedom Frenzy. This is the April 5th, 2011 version. My name's Jerry DeMars, and my co-host is Jenny Hodges. And, you know, dear, I think every once in a while I need to introduce you first. I should say something like, this is Freedom Frenzy. My co-host is Jennifer Renee Hodges, and I'm Jerry DeMars. And together we're going to do what we talked about yesterday. We actually got together on the phone last night and had an interesting debate about things that were only tangential to this Schofield issue. But we hammered out a plan of attack for today, and I think you're going to like what we've got, don't you, dear?
Oh, yes. It is going to be a fun show.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but when we were talking over Skype last night, Jenny and I and Jenny's husband, John, I got knocked off because of a really terrific thunderstorm that we had in our area last night three times and had to reconnect. And I guess it was going on 11 o'clock last night when we finally sort of got done with what we were doing. And I didn't have an opportunity to send out the notice about today's show. So I'm hoping that enough of you yesterday took us at our word and said when we said we were going to do the Schofield is expose the right word, dear? Expose, in my mind, means it's something that nobody knows about. And maybe the Schofield revelation fits better. What do you think?
I think expose could be fair because a lot of this information took me by surprise. And I guess dispensationalism was just some kind of hazy evolution. And so I didn't really probe that deeply. I guess I just dismissed it in my mind and moved on. So Schofield, once Joe kept pounding the issue, I finally decided, you know what? I better go take a look at this. And so what I discovered, even having been raised in an environment that loathed Schofield, was very interesting and surprising to me. So I think expose could be fair. Of course, now putting myself as the standard, if I don't know it, maybe no one else knows it, is ridiculous. As we all know, Jenny's level of ignorance is appalling. But I think
I just love it when you talk about yourself in the third person.
Mommy is going to get angry if you do that. You mean your mommy? I can say. No, I'm talking about myself in the third person. Oh, Gabriel went right before I went into my little sewing niche to do my radio show. Gabriel, who is six, wrapped his arms around me and said, Mommy, I hope you have a wonderful show, and I want you to tell everyone about the fabulous soda you make and tell them how they can make it too. And so I assured him that I would, and the soda that we imbibe around here is actually water kefir. And after you let it rest, the water kefir, with the water and sugar for 2 days, then you put it into soda bottles, basically, and add 1/5 of the total mass with some fruit juice. And let that sit for 2 days, and it carbonates. And when you take off the bottle top, be careful, because it'll pop like a champagne bottle and spray juice all over the place. So you better have it in a bowl to catch the dregs. Go ahead, Jay.
Are you done with the recipe there?
I'm all done. That's our soda recipe.
All right. I just wanted to let everyone know that we're going to, we don't know how long this is going to take. Jenny has got a body of information, and I've got a body of information. We talked about this last night, and I'm going to start. My bit is kind of an overview and pointing to some of the things that I think that are important. And then Jenny's going to follow on with information that she's garnered, and it's stuff that she counts as important and want you to be aware of. Now, we're going to forego hit and run news today, and we're just going to kick this off when we come back from this very first break. We ask you to withhold the phone calls. We don't even know if we're going to be able to deal with phone calls today, but if we can, we'll open the lines when that opportunity presents itself. So please, if you call in, you're probably going to be hanging there till your hair gets down to your shoulders or something, because we're probably not going to be able to get to you until way late in the program, okay?
Don't answer it.
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasermedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Okay, you guys need to pull up a chair, get something warm to drink, and be prepared to hear us out, because we've got a lot of information to give you today. Now, because we're talking about Scripture and the abuse thereof, I thought it appropriate to begin with a little bit of Scripture myself. And I want to give you 2 Corinthians 11:14-15. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it is not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be according to their deeds. Today we're going to talk about a man a great many know a little something about, but about which the great many knows far too little. His name is Cyrus Ingersoll Schofield, the man who wrote the Schofield Bible, or more accurately, the Schofield Reference Bible, published by the Oxford University Press. The identification of the publisher here is important because they, too, play a very important role in this, as you'll see. And to kind of give you a foreshadowing of that, you need to be aware of the following. There are forces at work in this world that have been trying to destroy this country for literally decades. There have been individuals with limitless financial resources who have openly stated that they want to destroy the sovereignty of the United States because, quite frankly, boys and girls, in the world, we are an anomaly. One such group of people that we must be mindful of, quite frankly, are Rhodes Scholars. That's right, Rhodes Scholars. The Rhodes Scholarships were set up by the late Cecil Rhodes, based on his design to carry out exactly what he wrote, that he wanted the United States recovered by England as an integral part of the British Empire. Do you know of any of the influential Rhodes Scholars? Where are they indoctrinated? Well, in England, of course. And if you pick up a copy of the Scofield Reference Bible and look at the binding, where does it say that the book is published? Oxford, at the Oxford University Press. See the connection? I think it's all very clear. It's the Rhodes Scholars who have been responsible for most of the legislation and rulings in this country that seem to be counterproductive and certainly contrary to the interests of liberty. Why, might you ask? For the benefit of this country? Not hardly. There is an all-out effort funded by wealthy men, names like Rhodes, of course, Carnegie, Rothschild, and certainly others of the similar ilk, to destroy this country. So now that you've been apprised of some of the background info, I feel as though I can proceed with the task at hand. The Scofield Bible just happens to be the one that the Christian community reads quite frequently, and upon which a goodly many have based their current doctrine. It is that influence which has served to radically change the face of Christianity since the middle of the 19th century. Because this material offers to be somewhat controversial, I think we ought to begin by highlighting the work of one of the Bible's most controversial prophets, and that would be Jeremiah. I sincerely hope you'll appreciate the parallels with our situation in America, and frankly, the entire world. Jeremiah in his day preached, he warned, he exposed a false preaching of his day, and all to no avail. He and his Israelite people went right into captivity, the very captivity that he had been warning his people about. He put that blame for the tragic collapse of his civilization right where it belonged, with the ministers who taught error. He wrote this, "Behold, the prophets say to them, you will not see the sword, neither will you see famine, but I will give you assured peace in this place. Then the Lord said unto me," this is all Jeremiah, "prophets prophesy lies in my name. I sent them not, neither have I commanded them, neither have I spake unto them. They prophesy unto you a false vision and divination." Here's an interesting point that God gave to Jeremiah. All the sins of the land were there because of the ministers. It was because of their preaching that the people were being led astray. I feel that it is undoubtedly a parallel to our time. Today, instead of the many, we're going to focus on only one of these individuals, and he has become one of the most famous ministers at the turn of the century, and that's Cyrus Scofield. Here's a brief overview of Mr. Scofield's life. He was born in Lewanee County, Michigan, August 19, 1843. He married Leontine Carey, fathered two daughters, Abigail and Helen, and a son by the name of Guy Sylvester. During the War of Northern Aggression, he served as a private in the Confederate Army, in particular the 7th Tennessee Infantry, Company H. A discharge was issued for Private Scofield in 1862 after 1 year of service. There is no definite record of where he was for the next 4 years. Between 1872 and 1873, he was a member of the Kansas Legislature. In 1873, he was appointed United States District Attorney for Kansas. Cyrus gave up his seat in the legislature and took the oath of office on June 8, 1873, to become the United States District Attorney. This ex-Confederate soldier solemnly swore that he had never borne arms against the United States. Scofield developed to be a heavy drinker and accumulated substantial debts. Cyrus also blazed a wide trail prior to his editorial foray with Biblical Interpretation and Modification. Adding to his exploits, we would need to say that he defrauded his mother-in-law out of her life savings, $1,300 in gold, a rather tidy sum in those days. He was convicted of forgery and spent 6 months in jail. He openly carried on with other women and abandoned his wife and children, sending them only scanty and infrequent support. When his wife finally divorced him, he married the woman with whom he was living. All the time, though, he was writing the now infamous notes to the Scofield Reference Bible. So, as a Christian, quite frankly, he was obviously a disgrace. As a man, he obviously lacked even what we'd call ordinary chivalry of a gentleman. And he called himself doctor, yet he never went to any college that would convey or could convey that degree. His life as a minister makes the recent escapades of some of the modern ministers today, the TV ones that you know very well, pale into insignificance. The 1912 edition of Who's Who in America places Scofield's conversion, and we're guessing to that of Christianity, we're not sure though, sometime in 1879. And Scofield says he was converted at the age of 36, and it has been assumed that the event did take place sometime before D.L. Moody's 1879 to 1880 evangelistic campaign. This places his conversion sometime after his 36th birthday on August 19th of 1879 and before the first meeting of Moody's ministers in St. Louis in November of that year. Public records do not support the details of Cyrus's conversion, so we don't know the whole truth about the conversion of a man who has profoundly influenced the church. As the forgery cases were being dismissed with unseemly haste and without fair settlement, Cyrus entered his new role as a worker with the Moody organization in the Moody meetings. Of course, until 1879, Cyrus was close to illiterate in things Christian, so it's unclear what role he could have played in the Moody's campaign. While involved in Moody's campaign, of course, which remained in St. Louis until April 1880, Cyrus avoided the reality of securing an income for himself or support for his family left in Atchison, Kansas. He paid his room rent, but sent very minimal amounts of money to his wife and then only occasionally, as I've previously mentioned. After the Moody meetings, Cyrus became acting secretary of the St. Louis YMCA in August of 1880. If he still had a law practice, and we've not touched on that really, it did not intrude into his YMCA duties. In July 1880, Cyrus joined the Pilgrim Congregational Church of St. Louis. Reverend D.C. Goodall, the pastor, was a personal friend of Reverend James Brooks. Reverend Brooks, the pastor of St. Louis's Walnut Street Presbyterian Church, sponsored Scofield's Christian service. As Scofield's idea on prophecy began to take shape, they were sparked by the teachings of his sponsor, who was in turn influenced by John Nelson Darby. About 1850, to give you an idea about Darby, Darby began publishing his dispensationalist writings in Europe, and from 1862 to 1877, he made 7 lecture trips to America and to Canada to promote his teachings. Brooks' views of a failing church were also influenced by other theologians who wanted the same prophetic view taught and accepted. Remarkably, with such limited theological background and training, as well as any real scholarship, Scofield was able to profoundly alter Christian theology. Indeed, the shape of fundamentalism, which has claimed to be Orthodox Christianity, has been determined by the influence of a dubious character like Scofield. The church issued Scofield a license to preach. He organized and pastored the Hyde Park Congregational Church of St. Louis, where he continued until the summer of 1882. Then someone suggested that he might just be the man to fill a vacancy in their Dallas, Texas church. On July 28, 1881, about the time that Cyrus was licensed, Leontine Scofield had divorce papers drawn up, although case number 2161 was never filed until December 9th that year. Leontine charged that Cyrus had absented himself, abandoned the family, and had neglected his duties. Further, she charged that he had failed to contribute to the family's economic well-being. Scofield, of course, denied each and every allegation. The court issued a decree for Leontine, but somehow the divorce never became final. In March 1882, Cyrus's lawyer requested a dismissal, which was granted. The case remained in limbo.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
In times like these, you can't depend on the government to keep you warm and fed, but you can depend on the Vermont Bun Baker to do just that. With the Vermont Bun Baker, you'll never be in a situation where you can't cook, bake, fry, boil water, or heat your home, all at the same time. One of the most revolutionary cook stoves, wood stoves ever, the Vermont Bun Baker is available with or without soapstone veneer, a natural stone that retains heat and radiates it back into the room once the fire is out. A beautiful addition to your home, the Vermont Bun Baker has an efficiency rating well above 75% and qualifies for the wood stove tax credit. For more information, watch the Vermont Bun Baker on YouTube and live stream or visit us at www.vermontwoodstove.com. You can also reach us by calling 1-866-SOAPSTONE. Don't ever be hungry or cold because the power's gone out. With a Vermont Bun Baker, all you have to worry about is what's for dinner.
All right, guys, we're going to jump right back into this. Of course, for those of you that have just tuned in, We're exploring currently the life of Cyrus Scofield, the progenitor of the Scofield Reference Bible. During all the hubbub about this divorce proceeding, Cyrus never disclosed that he even had a wife to his congregation. In fact, he gave them the impression that he was a bachelor. In 1883, Leontine became a librarian at the Atchison Public Library. On October 1st, 1883, she filed a second divorce petition. And on December 8th, 1883, that divorce was granted. Divorce papers deemed Cyrus unfit for custody of their children. Among the many malicious acts that characterized his career was one peculiarly atrocious act of a con man. Shortly after he left Kansas, leaving his wife and two children dependent upon the bounty of his wife's mother, he wrote his wife that he could invest some of her mother's money, $1,300 to be exact, all that she had, in a manner that would return big interest. After some correspondence, he forwarded them a mortgage signed and executed by one Charles Best, purporting to convey valuable property in St. Louis. Upon receiving this, the money was sent to him. Afterwards, the mortgages were found to be base forgeries. No such person as Charles Best even existed, and the property conveyed in the mortgages was entirely fictitious. Now that we know a little bit about this guy, let's see what or how he became involved in events that led up to the creation that at once made him both famous and, of course, notorious. His remuneration and financial support for his work on the Reference Bible came from Zionist and conspiratorial groups out of Boston, Massachusetts, chiefly known as the Secret Six. Some claim that this association would serve to link him with the Illuminati and other similarly unsavory organizations that you've no doubt or likely heard of. I could find nothing exactly definitive to this point and mean to make these associations by reference only. Nevertheless, I think it's safe to say that old Cyrus was hardly like Jeremiah. And it wouldn't be too much of a leap to conclude that Cyrus actually wasn't called into his chosen light of work. Even so, his false doctrines have spread, particularly in America, like a virulent disease. God himself is likely disgusted with the foul stench because the doctrines he preached and taught have now taken over fundamentalistic churches all across the country. Why would we be interested in Scofield from just that point of view? The answer lies with the fact that in order to promote the socialization of America to take over the country, the Bible must become universalized. So along with some of false teachers like Scofield, who began... Let me start that sentence again, please. So along came some false preachers like Scofield, who began to weave it into various and certain Jewish fables. The situation becomes greatly amplified when you consider that thousands or so so-called fundamentalist ministers carry or study the reference notes of the Scofield Bible. Many Protestant Bible school students use this Bible as their primary reference. They use it as their source as to what the scriptures really mean, not necessarily what they actually say. If any of the prophets ever preached about a modern-day prophet who created a widow or who was the deceiver of the elect, devouring the souls so that they might not be admitted to the kingdom of heaven, or who was out for dishonest gain, it had to be Cyrus Ingersoll Scofield. Ask yourselves this. Do you own, read, or carry a Scofield anointed Bible? Do you attend a church that teaches the lies of what's apparently a convicted criminal and fornicator? America's political and social life, whether we like it or not, is based upon the general theology and, by consequence, the moral character of the people. When the theology has been corrupted, the politics will soon follow. During this period from around 1800 to 1850, there was a movement in the country called the Age of Reason. It caught a lot of the men who were otherwise smart, including men like Thomas Paine. It contains a lot of the same ideas as today's New Age movement. It was a thought theology with the purpose of changing our Christian population before the greater conspiracy of world socialism could be implemented. In order to refute Christ's words concerning Esau Edom, that they were of their father the devil, this theology had to be changed so that God is the father of all men and all peoples, and that Satan is not the father of any of them. Do you see how all that works? The second part of this theology is the idea that all men are brothers, which is intended to refute the scriptural teaching and truth that all men are not brothers, and that God has a chosen people, of all people, on the face of the earth. This dichotomy you are going to have to sort out in your own mind and make the decision whether to choose what it says in Scripture or what man says. If you think about it, the concept of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man is the central theme of socialism and, of course, communism. Christianity, if you dissect it from merely a church function, it's a thought theology of government, commerce, and economics, the fruits of which results in a nation of liberty and, of course, individual responsibility. Now, Scofield never attended any college, even for one day as a student. Scofield, however, fancied himself as a lawyer, but he assumed all sorts of phony credentials, from that of a minister.
A break coming, I think, Jerry.
Indeed. We'll be right back.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generation.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
The Berkeelite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeelite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeelite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeelite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
Welcome back. Today's show is devoted to the exploration of the life and nefarious qualities of Cyrus Scofield and how it relates to the influence that he's had on America and the world, for that matter, through his work in the Scofield Reference Bible. Now, I'm going to back up here just a little bit so that the thought remains has a little bit of continuity. Scofield never attended any college, even for one day as a student. Scofield, however, fancied himself as a lawyer, but he assumed all sorts of phony credentials, from that of a minister to that of a Bible scholar and even to that of a lawyer. Nothing seemed to hinder him, certainly not a conscience. And of course, he was not admitted to the bar, as he could not pass the examination. However, through the influence of those men comprising that Secret Six organization that I mentioned earlier, Scofield was finally admitted to the bar there in Kansas, though he had never attended any school with no formal training whatever. He gave himself a theological doctorate degree in pretty much the same way. Schofield went on with the help of the Secret Six to be appointed United States Attorney for Kansas, only to be forced to resign in a mere 6 months later, when he and his friend, a gentleman by the name of Ingalls, who's a story all on his own, were caught trying to blackmail the railroads out of some money. What is important here is that the Boston Six, Secret Six, assigned Schofield the task of translating the Fatherhood of God and the Brotherhood of Man concept into a system of Bible teaching. It was in those long days and nights when he was in prison for forgery that Schofield began studying the theological philosophy of John Nelson Darby. Some say that Darby was a scattered-brained Englishman, and today we might even call him a hippie. Purportedly, he never washed, never cleaned himself up, but he did become a great scholar. Darby was already doing in England what the Secret Six had assigned Schofield to do here in the United States. He brought the Brotherhood of Man and Fatherhood of God into a new denomination, the Brethren Movement. I think Jenny's going to touch on that, aren't you, dear?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
But you can go ahead and say whatever you want. It might.
No. I just wanted to point out that there's more to follow. The Secret Six, of course, these were wealthy men, very influential men, and they certainly were not stupid. They had done their homework. They had reasoned quite correctly that America could not be converted from a republic to an internationalist, socialist democracy until the vast majority of American churches could be taught that the church is not supposed to be militant regarding the affairs of state, and that God's laws, statutes, and judgments were not valid as a means of governing a nation. You see, our problems didn't just begin yesterday. They have been after this for literally hundreds of years. It was necessary to subvert the First Amendment, amongst other things, and in order to promote the idea that the church was to offer no suggestion and to be silent regarding the affairs of state. The effect of that was vital to every Christian in his way of life. It was actually quite a project for Mr. Schofield. Since God thought so much of righteous government, he devoted a goodly portion of Scripture to that subject. Now, with the Secret Six, Schofield and some of his associates, men such as Dwight L. Moody, things were going to change. In July of 1901, Schofield confided to his friends that he intended to develop this reference Bible that would bring about this new beginning and new testimony. Of course, such tremendous effort takes a lot of money and a lot of time. Schofield had the time, and he needed the money. While he was talking like a Christian out of one side of his mouth, he was taking money and doing the bidding of his socialist-slash-communist friends in the Secret Six. His association with the Secret Six also served to get him admitted into the Lotus Club in New York City, much to the embarrassment of his true Christian friends. The key seemed to be the fact that he was working on his reference Bible with that new focus. The club was restricted to journalists, artists, musicians, friends of literature, science, and fine arts, those sorts of things. Schofield was at this time no more than a Kansas con man, but he was a man with some highly placed friends. The club's literature committee, which passed on, quote-unquote, Dr. Schofield, was none other than Samuel Untermeyer, who was at that time the notorious criminal lawyer whose accomplishments on behalf of socialists and communists in America takes up two columns in Who's Who of America. Untermeyer introduced Schofield to numerous Zionist and socialist leaders, including Samuel Gompers, Fiorello LaGuardia, Abraham Strauss, Bernard Baruch, and Jacob Schiff. These were people who financed Schofield's research trips to Oxford and arranged the publication and distribution of his work. The purpose of Samuel Untermeyer and those associated with him was to find a way to get fundamental Christians to have an interest in and support for the international Zionist cause, one of Untermeyer's lifelong projects. Schofield had a long association with him and had to come to know about his un-American activities. The people behind the scenes, and certainly behind Untermyer, knew that Schofield's quote-unquote, any moment now, rapture doctrine, which he stole from Darby, would be a valuable psychological tool to forward their agenda. Why would Christians become concerned if the communists took over the world, or if the so-called New World Order took effect, if they believed the rapture could happen at any time now? Why would they become worried with the thousands of problems created by the steady encroachment of totalitarian socialism, world banking system failure, national debt, or even AIDS for that matter, if the scenario of this world is not my home, as promoted through Schofield's doctrines, could be embossed upon their psyches? Why bother with patriotic activities when you're of the mind that the kingdom is but a heartbeat away as you come to love Jesus? See how that works? Proverbs 3:36 says, add thou not to his words, lest he reprove you and you be found a liar. Although it was not heard of 100 years prior, many ministers of 1920s and 1930s were preaching Schofield's dispensationalism, which in his own words, he called the New Testimony. And it became quite commonplace. A push was on in the late 1930s to get the Schofield Reference Bible into the hands of Protestant denominations. Schofield notes, stating right on the pages of the King James Bible, that the Jews are all of Israel. And that was to set the stage for the theft, and it actually did set the stage for the theft of Palestine from the Palestinian people and give it by the United Nations decree to a mixed multitude, most of whose forebears never set foot in the land for 1,000 years, if ever. For those reasons alone, Schofield's notes were worth every penny that Samuel Untermyer and his Secret Six friends paid for them. It must be remembered that almost all institutions of higher learning at that time were denominational. The University of Chicago, for instance, was Baptist. Georgetown was Roman Catholic. And others were Methodist, Presbyterian, or Episcopalian. Even Harvard, that liberal flagship, was officially Unitarian. Again, from the perspective of the group, a takeover of academe was essential to their purpose. The mountain of the Lord's house was to be an institution of education and law, or regulation and prohibition. Somehow, these institutions had to become Judaicized and separated from their Christian denominational origins. World Zionist leaders initiated a program to change America and its religious orientation. One of the tools used to accomplish this goal was an obscure and malleable Civil War veteran named Cyrus Schofield. A much larger tool was the venerable, world-respected European book club publisher, the Oxford University Press. I need to get a drink here. Just excuse me just a second. The scheme was to alter the Christian view of Zionism by creating and promoting a pro-Zionist subculture within Christianity. Schofield's role was to rewrite the King James Version of the Bible by inserting Zionist-friendly notes in the margins, between verses and chapters, and on the bottoms of the pages. The Oxford University Press used Schofield, a pastor by then, as the editor, probably because it needed such a man for a front. The revised Bible was called the Schofield Reference Bible, and with tremendous advertising and promotion, it became the best-selling Bible in America and has remained so for 90 years. The Schofield Reference Bible was not to be just another translation subverting minor passages a little at a time. No, Schofield produced a revolutionary book that radically changed the context of the King James Version. It was designed to create a subculture around a new worship icon, the modern state of Israel, a state that did not yet exist, but which was already on the drawing boards of the committed, well-funded authors of World Zionism. Schofield's support came from a movement that took root around the turn of the century, supposedly motivated by disillusionment over what it considered the stagnation of mainline American churches. Some of these reformers were later to serve on Schofield's editorial committee. Schofield imitated a chain of past heretics and rapturists, most whose credibility fizzled over their faulty end times prophecies. His mentor, as I mentioned before, was one John Nelson Darby from Scotland, who was associated with the Plymouth Brethren and who made no less than 6 evangelical trips to the United States, selling what is today called Darbyism. It is from Darby that Schofield is thought to have learned his Christian Zionist theology, which he later planted in the footnotes of the Schofield Reference Bible. It is possible that Oxford University Press shared Schofield's interest in Darbyism, for Darby was well known to the Oxford University. The Oxford University Press owned the Schofield Reference Bible from the beginning, as indicated by its copyright, and Schofield stated he received handsome royalties from Oxford. Oxford's advertisers and promoters succeeded in making Schofield's Bible, with its Christian Zionist footnotes, a standard for interpreting scripture. Excuse me just a second. I'm dry.
Is it almost time for me to take over here, Jerry? You're giving good stuff. This is fascinating.
Well, I'm getting close to the end. This is going surprisingly faster than I ever imagined. It has been published in at least 4 editions since its introduction in 1908 and remains one of the largest selling Bibles ever. The Schofield Reference Bible and its several clones is all but worshipped in the ranks of celebrity Christians, beginning with the first media icon, evangelist Billy Graham. Of particular importance to the Zionist penetration of American Christian churches has been the fast growth of national Bible study organizations such as the Bible Study Fellowship and Precept Ministries. These draw millions of students from not only evangelical fundamentalist churches, but also from Catholic and mainline Protestant churches and non-church contacts. These invariably teach forms of dispensationalism, which draw their theory, to various degrees, from the notes in the Oxford Bible. From the 19th century perspective, this was viewed as entailing the destruction of all religion. All things turned out, due to the work of people like Cyrus Schofield, Christianity itself had been successfully converted into a tool for Zionism, and the universities were secularized from within. If we look at our churches today, we can see how they nearly universally promulgate the false doctrines of the Brotherhood of Man, world citizenship, and including the campaign to make the world safe for the children, at the cost of our nationhood and freedom. For now, it is sufficient to observe that the mainstream religions have been successfully incorporated within academia itself, a complete situation reversal. Among more traditional churches that encourage, and in some cases recommend, the use of the Schofield Reference Bible, it is the huge Southern Baptist Convention of America whose capture is World Zionism's crowning achievement. Schofield, whose work is largely believed to be the product of Darby and others, wisely chose not to change the text of the King James edition. Instead, he added those hundreds of easy-to-read footnotes at the bottom of about half of the pages, and as the old English grammar of the King James edition becomes increasingly difficult for progressive generations of readers, students become increasingly dependent on the modern language footnotes. Schofield's notes weave parts of the Old and New Testaments together as though the same people wrote all of it, all at the same time. This is a favorite device of modern dispensationalists who essentially weigh all scripture against the unspoken and preposterous theory that the older it is, the more authoritative. In many cases, the Oxford references prove to be puzzling rabbit trails leading nowhere, simply diversions. Schofield's borrowed ideas were later popularized under the labels and definitions that evolved into common usage today, premillennialism, dispensationalism, Judeo-Christianity, and most recently the highly political movement openly called Christian Zionism. In 1974, William E. Cox, a former dispensationalist and subsequent critic, offered this appraisal of Scofield's abiding legacy. Scofield's notes in his systematized schemes of hermeneutics have been memorized by many as religiously as have verses of the Bible. It is not at all uncommon to hear devout men recite these footnotes prefaced by the words, "The Bible says." Many a pastor has lost all influence with members of his congregation and has been branded a liberal for no other reason than failure to concur with the footnotes of Dr. Scofield. Even many ministers use the teachings of Scofield as tests of orthodoxy. We're going to cut away to a break. When we come back, there's more Scofield to come. Don't go anywhere.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, "Help, I've fallen and I can't get up," protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now 1-800-410-0739. 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When I had a heart attack at 42, I was not sure what the future held. But a year later, the doctors could find nothing wrong with me and took me off all my medication. What did I do? I took a herbal mixture of garlic, cayenne, and a few other herbs mixed in liquid form. I now call this Extendovite. I would have never believed that a few simple herbs could actually change my life like they did. Now it's your turn to see what the powers of garlic and cayenne can do for you. For only $69.95 plus shipping and handling for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid, you too can begin on your path to better health. For more information, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
All right, continuing with this expose of the individual by the name of Cyrus Scofield, I've got another quote to give you. This is Craig Blasing, professor of systematic theology at Dallas Theological Seminary. He put it like this. The Scofield Reference Bible became the Bible of fundamentalism, and the theology of the notes approached confessional status in many Bible schools, institutes, and seminaries established in the early decades of this century. It's not so much that Scofield preached another gospel. He is not the only man to have done so. Resentment arises when one realizes that Scofield stooped to using God's word as an element of subversion to cause American liberty to fall, and did so for profit. His doctrines and reference notes, prepared with Jewish funding, has neutralized the church to where they are indifferent to what is happening in America. Some have yet to outgrow that indifference to where they take a stand and do something about what's going on in our country. The current version of the Scofield Bible, put out by the Oxford University Press, publishers of all editions, and those including since Scofield's death in 1921, was published with edits of Scofield's original commentary, deleting some portions of that in their entirety. This editing process also included a sizable number of additions. These alterations have served to further radicalize the Scofield Bible into a manual for the Christian worship of the State of Israel, beyond even which Scofield would have dared to dream. This unchristian, anti-Arab theology has permitted the theft of Palestine and 50 years plus of death and destruction carried out against the Palestinians, with hardly a complaint from the Judeo-Christian mass media evangelists or most other American church leaders, for that matter. There are only a few exceptions, and these are and have been typically vilified by the media and from some of the aforementioned pulpits and by the likes of the Southern Poverty Law Center, as well as the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith. Over my lifetime, the number of churches and, of course, the number of preachers have been steadily rising. It seems as though religiosity has become a thriving business. But with all that money to build new churches, one nearly on every corner, and with all that energy being expended in the pulpits every weekend, why has America continued to sink? Could it be, just as in the days of Jeremiah, that there's something wrong with the message, that the teaching and or the foundational concepts from which they rise are actually the root of the problem? With all that we know of going on around us, I think that we'd be hard-pressed to find a more likely cause. Hopefully this message will be of some use in turning some away from what seems to be very clear error promoted by a man, clearly a reprobate. And I'll leave you with this. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirits. That's Proverbs 15:4. Dear, I'm done. You're up.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to cut away to a break here in another minute and a half or thereabouts. But I thought you brought forth some great stuff, Jerry. And I hope that people who are listening will, you know, send their friends, family, Bible study groups, links to today's program, because I'm going to bring forth more particulars on what exactly the theological position of Scofieldism is and elaborate on that a bit, just to better arm you to take back America and take back our liberty. This is Freedom Frenzy. We'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.